Well, good morning, beloved. It's good to be with you and to be in the scriptures together today. We have been studying the Gospel of Matthew for some time, and so now we're headed into chapter 13. And this is going to begin a series that is going to be our last series in the Gospel of Matthew. So likely this should carry us through most of the summer. But what we're going to take time to do is just go through the parables of Jesus in this gospel. So let's start today with this question. What is a parable? What is it? Fundamentally, a parable is a story that communicates a spiritual truth. And so what God does is he uses stories. He's a storyteller, you could say, to communicate truth, because truth is lived. Truth is not just an idea. Truth is a reality. It's not just theory. It's a lived reality. And so what Jesus is doing is he is consistently seeking to reveal a heavenly truth in a world separated from heaven. So this separation makes it difficult for us to understand things because it's spiritually foreign or alien to us. So what Jesus does is he uses a story from earth as an analogy to explain what heaven is like, what the kingdom of heaven is like. Now, it's not necessarily a real historical story. The stories that Jesus uses aren't necessarily entirely having have happened. But I do think because of God's knowledge of humanity and knowledge of the world, I actually like to think of the stories as having really happened. Like, take the parable of the two sons, or what's known as the parable of the prodigal son. We don't know that that's a real story, like a real historical happening, but I sure think it's very likely, right? So from God's vantage point, he sees all things, knows all things. And so I like to think, even though we don't know of it specifically being grounded with specific individuals, I think it's very likely true. Luke's gospel says that Jesus never spoke without using parables. So his primary means of communication was to use parables, was to use these stories. And here's the problem of parables, is that he often doesn't explain the meaning. He just tells the story. He'll say things like, the kingdom of heaven is like this, and then he'll tell a story, and then won't explain exactly what he means by that. Jesus does tell things straight. Like his teaching, and when we read the Gospels, Jesus can be very forthright, can't he? Very blunt, very to the point. But Jesus can also tell things slant, which is in a roundabout way. And instead of making things absolutely clear, Jesus leaves people sitting in the mystery and unsure of its meaning. He tells stories in such a way that you have to sit there and think, what does that mean? What does he mean by that? Now, in verse 10 of this passage that we're looking at today, the disciples come to Jesus and say, why do you do that? Why do you speak in parables? Why can't you just be really honest and open about what your meaning is? Why hide your meaning from people? Why not just tell it straight so people can easily understand it? Why do you intentionally make it a spiritual mystery? Don't we want people to understand what you're saying? Don't we want people to understand who you are? Don't we want people to understand what the good news is? So make it as simple as possible. Isn't that kind of our natural inclination to want it to be like that? Because we want people to come to church and rightly understand who God is and what God is like and what God has done. And yet, a burr in the saddle of that desire is Jesus himself. Is God saying, how about we make it a little difficult? Isn't that kind of annoying? And this is the sense that we get from the disciples going, how about you don't? How about you just make it as clear and simple and forthright as possible? So what we get in this discourse is Jesus explaining why. His reasoning for his commitment to telling stories that make you think. And so verse 11, he says this, and he answered them, to you, to the disciples, it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven. But to them, in this case, he's talking about the crowds, the Pharisees, etc. To them, it has not been given, he says. Basically, I've given you, the apostles, the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but not to everybody. What are exactly the secrets of the kingdom, though? So this idea that there's these things in God's heavenly kingdom, which sin has separated on earth, and all of these things are like secrets in heaven. And Jesus is saying that he wants to reveal those secrets to the earth, to the world. So what are those secrets? Those secrets are what we call the gospel, the good news of who God is and what God is like. So instead of this mystery, nameless person, God is revealing who he is and what he is like, that he is not just far away, but invested, present, loving. Not perpetually angry, but loving, merciful, gracious. These are the secrets. The other secret that Jesus reveals is the problem of sin and evil. That he wants to make it clear that something has broken us and needs a solution. And that it's a problem so big only God can be that solution. The other part of his secret is that this is God's plan. God's whole plan is to bring a solution, is to be the salvation for humanity and the whole creation. And so all of these different secrets, Jesus is essentially saying, let me tell you what it's really like with God. Let me tell you what it feels like to be with God. Let me tell you what God expects of you and what God is seeking to do for you. Isn't that the kind of clarity we want? We want to get in on these kinds of secrets. Because in these secrets is all the gifts of God, all the gifts that he stored up and kept kind of hidden through all of human history, but have been in his heart since before the foundations of the world. And so when we hear Jesus teach, we hear him unveil things that we're like, oh, that's what God is like, or that's what God is going to do, or that's God's plan. We hear Jesus talk about things like the judgment and destruction of evil. It helps us go, oh, that's what you're going to do. Because before it felt like a secret we couldn't get in on and couldn't get clear. These are all the open secrets of heaven. And his point is saying that I've given this to you. So truth then, revelation then, is a gift by God. So it's not primarily about whether or not you're deserving of the truth of the revelation, or you've earned understanding, or you've quested or studied hard enough. He's primarily saying that revelation is a gift. And that's actually good news, isn't it? For foolish people like me to know that revelation is a sovereign gift of God where he helps me see it, allows me to see it, is actually good news for me. And just like every other grace, part of what it does is makes us reliant on the gift giver. So in the gospel, in Christianity, there's no like secret path to knowledge. There's no like, it's not about what you can do to kind of figure it out and get there. And you're special if you're one of the chosen who made it. Instead, it's about a God who loves to reveal, and he's the one that does the work to do that. And so what he does is he gives those secrets of the kingdom, but then here's the uncomfortable point Jesus is making, to some and not to others. So why hasn't it been given to everyone? Does that seem like a helpful question? Verse 12, he says, "For to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away." So to the ones he has already revealed some of the secrets of the kingdom, he'll reveal even more, he's saying. Because God has given what theologians call general revelation. Anyone heard of this concept of general revelation? This is what God has chosen to reveal to all people everywhere. Okay, so what does God reveal to everybody, to every human? And theologians talk a lot in church history about two main things that are key to general revelation. That God reveals himself through creation, right? That the creation itself is pointing to a loving creator. The beauty of it, the intricacies of it, the goodness of it points to a goodness that has created it. The second thing that theologians talk about for general revelation is through conscience. It's through this inner conversation that you have that's pointing to the need for a savior. What does conscience tell us? Something's not right. Right? It's that even if you're so busy, you don't really hear your conscience till late at night or till you're having a shower. But it's that quiet moment where you all of a sudden feel in the depths inside your soul where you go, that wasn't right. I'm not living the way that I'm meant to be living. This isn't goodness. That's conscience, that you have a sense deep down inside of right and wrong. Now, through your life, you could beat the crap out of your conscience so it gets real quiet, okay? You could beat it right down and tell it to be silent and say, I actually have no interest in hearing you whatsoever, and that voice will get quieter. Some of you have a very active conscience, and you just feel wrong all the time and everything. I'm in that camp. But the point being is that there's this gift that's been given to us by God to go inside, you know. And it's not about somebody else's arguments or any of that. You know in there, something's off. Now, not everyone has been open to receive what God has universally given. Not everybody wants to hear what God is saying, essentially. Right? Some see the creation as like a closed system, and they go, I don't see anything inside the system revealing God. But the point of the creation is to point beyond itself, to say something outside of this exists. It's like reading a novel and going, I don't see the author anywhere here. It's like, well, they're the one writing the book. And so the creation is meant to point to that author. And some don't want to see that. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to consider that. I love what's happening in our day and age in the sciences, of how much the science is pushing outside. Like all of the evolutionary conversations we've had for so many years are now, even the atheists, what's known as the new atheists, like Richard Dawkins and all these individuals that really pushed in the last 20 years for like a revival of atheism, now are looking at our society and saying, were so broken and morally bankrupt. Their new atheists are writing articles in the last month saying we should become cultural Christians, not believing in the deity of Jesus, not believing in his plan of salvation, but we should be cultural Christians because of its moral benefit. Isn't that hilarious? To see it come all the way back around? Some problems you just gotta wait for to become clear. And I think even the stuff that we're hearing from scientists going, yeah, we see now that something had to cause this universe, so maybe it's alien. And it's like, yeah. And what if alien meaning different from us, other than us, beyond us? These are the kinds of conversations I love to have with teenagers to go, if we just wait and see, watch how science will actually prove the Christ, I think. So, but the point being is that in this general revelation, not everybody is open to hearing it. And so those who kind of listen to his general revelation and search for the Creator and search and look for the Savior are those he wants to give more to. The secrets of heaven, the specifics of the gospel, the unique saving revelation of Christ. That's what he's saying. Those who heard the general revelation and went, I think I want more. I think I need to find the source of this. These are the ones he's going are primed and ready to hear about how God is Christ. How Christ is the one who created the earth. How Christ is the one who has come to save. The specific revelation. Now, how can you tell those who have been given those secrets? And I think it's a spiritual depth that you can pick up on when you meet someone. And the markers usually tend to be things like humility, like a soft-heartedness, a recognition of wrong in their own lives, like they're not self-defensive of their mistakes, and this desire for authentic, true love, not conjured love, but real love. And when you meet someone like that, you can find that. You'll be some random place, taking your kids to jump in Jiminy's or a park or someone, and you meet somebody and you're talking to them and you're like, what is up with this person? And you can just feel that depth, that openness, versus a closedness to the universe, a closedness to God, a closedness to others that just says, I'm on my own, I take care of my own, I earn my own. And it's closed in. Jesus' desire, though, is that those who have that openness, that depth, would have an abundance of his open secret. Now, those who reject his general revelation, though, what about them? He's saying he will even remove what little light of understanding that they have. Isn't that a sad statement? So Jesus is saying those who are rejecting and hard-hearted towards his revelation, he'll remove even the little bits of revelation that they have. And here's how we see this in the Gospels. We see this in the hearts and the behaviors of the Pharisees. As they encounter Jesus, they actually begin to see less and less the more he reveals right in front of their eyes. You notice that? It's like he's showing them more and they're seeing him less. And it's always a sad moment that we can see in the text. And here's what he does, and this is my theory, is that God allows this to happen. This is his design, even based on this text. When people are not motivated by the light of revelation, when they see the beauty of God or hear the goodness of the gospel, that he can save you, he can change your heart, he can forgive you, he can restore you, he can bring you back to life. When they hear the goodness of it and they go, not even remotely interested. I was thinking about this the other day in my quiet time. If it turns out I am wrong, like that Jesus isn't real, and the gospel isn't a thing, I feel like, honestly, at the end of my life, I would go, but it was worth it because of how beautiful it sounded. Like, it was still the best thing to give my life to, even if it's untrue. Now, I don't actually think it might be untrue. I just think it's that good that I would keep doing it even if it was untrue, I guess is what I'm saying. That's how beautiful I think the gospel is. But for people who are not motivated by that beauty at all, his strategy is to actually hand them over, to be motivated by seeing the pervasive power of the dark within themselves. So here's what he's saying, that even the light that I did give them, I'll take away, and things will get darker for them. And he hands them over to their desire for darkness in order that the darkness would convince them of their need for the light. The beauty of God and his gospel does not inspire faith in you, then maybe the reality of evil and the impact of sin will. So here, how this is where I think it's statements like these of Jesus's that I think motivate some of the writings of Paul. So let me read Romans 1 to you and see if you can sound or hear the same logic coming up in Paul's writing. Beginning verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were what? Darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up. It's like giving permission to go, if this is what you want, then you can have this. God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. You can see the concept here of going, if the light does not entice you, then have what you want. Have the dark, because it will entice you to want the light eventually too. Verse 13, Jesus goes on. This is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. I speak to them in parables because when I speak straight to them, they intellectually see, but don't see in their heart. They hear the concept, but their hearts don't hear the offer. They act like they understand, but I know in the depths of their heart they don't understand at all. It's as though the longer they stare at the sun, the darker their hearts get with sin. Jesus then quotes the prophet Isaiah, verse 14 and 15. Indeed, in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, that says, you will indeed hear but never understand, and you will indeed see but never perceive. For this people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and turn, and I would heal them. There's a religious thought that says, if God would just explain things better, then I would understand him and follow him better. You could hear it in every interaction with the Pharisees. They demand a sign. They want better answers. They want different proofs. And they're never satisfied because they barely hear. They hear just enough to challenge the concept. They hear just enough to question it. They hear just enough to argue it and to push back on it. The more he explains, the less they want to listen. And the more he reveals, the less they want to look. They intentionally choose to close their eyes to who Jesus is and what Jesus is offering in his accomplishments. This is what we see time and time again from people when exposed to the person of Jesus. Why? Because if they let themselves see and hear and understand with their hearts in turn, they know they would be healed. And the last thing that they want is to admit that they need to be healed. They have this whole system of self-confidence that they don't want to deconstruct. When we do pilgrimage, we've been doing, this is our discipleship way of teaching people the fundamentals about Jesus. And we've been doing this for over a decade. The types of statements I hear most often are, I don't have time to need God. It disrupts my life rhythms. I don't need healing. I'm okay. And my personal favorite is this, I have already received his healing. The idea that we're done. And so I don't have time or interest or need for anything more. And covering that, saying that by saying, because I've already been healed, is a cover-up. It's a cover-up every time. A true follower of Jesus will want to understand from the depths of their heart, how does this good news save me? And turn and be healed. Now, verse 16, Jesus goes on, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. This is the whole point of what Jesus is working up to, is to go, look, this is the way it's going to be, is that I am going to be me. I'm going to reveal me. I'm going to reveal God's love for the world. I'm going to reveal God's plan for salvation. I'm going to reveal how deep the need is. And I'm going to reveal that this is all available to every person here and now. And there's going to be a myriad of responses. But largely, it will be those who see the need and go, please, me, every part of me, please. And there will be those that go, no thanks. And their no will get stronger and stronger and stronger the more and more Jesus reveals. But those who say, yes, me, those are the ones who are blessed. Because your eyes will see, you'll see the beauty of Jesus and the sufficiency of his salvation. Your ears will hear the good news that finally brings you relief to where you need it most. This is what true blessing looks like. Seeing the salvation of God in Jesus and hearing that it's for you. This is the kind of people that we want to be, and this is the kind of church we want to build. Can I tell you a little secret? A church is healthy. A church is alive, not because the preaching and teaching is clear or good or exciting. Or revelatory. A church is healthy. A church is alive when the people of the church can hear the smallest bit of gospel truth and wholeheartedly run to the altar, fall down on their knees, and desperately receive the grace that's being offered. That's a truly healthy and alive church. That's the honest truth. It has little to do with what happens up here, as long as this is staying true to the original gospel. This can all be done poorly. Like in the sense of like not great speakers and spill things and fumble things on the table and screw up the liturgy. And look like kind of silly little buffoons up here. But if those little bits of truth come out, if that's enough to make you go, that's everything I want. That's what I came for. And I will give all of the parts of my life that that has implications on. I will eagerly, desperately seek for it. That's what a healthy church is. If there is not, like in every element of the liturgy, in the readings, in the creed, they give enough good news to the church to incite revival. Do you know that? The liturgy itself, the creed itself, all of it, it's enough good news to make us fall down in desperation and stand up in joy. Is that true? And so if there is not an uproarious turning to and reviving of that gospel, then it's not from lack of clarity in the pulpit or explanation. It's because our hearts, our individual hearts and our collective hearts, have each grown dull. It's like, yeah, I get it. Heard it enough. Where the heart says, I'm okay. Interesting concept, though. Loved thinking about this. That's a dull heart. A true heart, hearing the gospel, goes, please me, please this, please all of these parts of me. A saved heart is saying, I don't care what the person next to me is doing. I don't care what the music sounds like. I don't care about any of this. I just need Jesus to work for me and the parts of me that I'm dying. That's revival. That's what revival looks like. That's what Christian maturity looks like. But because we don't actually want to see how deep our need is, and we want to hide in our thoughts, we talk around the gospel and argue over significant things, all to avoid our need for more of because it's uncomfortable. And we're Canadian. Because we have more hurt and sin than we want to admit. And because it's easier to talk about anything else. Let's talk about Trudeau. We can all talk about that. Let's talk politics. Let's talk pickleball. Let's talk anything other than how bad I need this Jesus. But a truly apostolic church, in a church that looks and feels like the early church, is described more like this, what Jesus is saying. Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear, that we might turn and be healed. We then say to the world, if you want to hear good news and are ready to truly see Jesus, then come with me and you too can be blessed. Verse 17, Jesus ends, for truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous people longed to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. The purpose of the parables is this, to help you get out of your head, the theoretical and the impersonal, so that you can see, hear, and understand from the heart the great secrets of heaven fully unveiled in Jesus. But here's the wild and difficult part of Jesus, is that in order to see how beautiful he is, you have to be personal about it. You have to see how his beauty, his power, his accomplishments are for our deficiencies, our brokenness, our hardship, our pain, our sorrow, our sin. It has to be those. It has to be to see Jesus, I've got to be honest about me. But if I'm honest about me, I'll see how good Jesus is for me. And then I participate in the goodness of Jesus. Isn't that what we want? Isn't it? Hard road, some uncomfortable spots. But man, is it worth it to get to that participation, isn't it? To go, because I want in on all the love. I want in on all the forgiveness. I want in on the empowerment and the future and the mercy and the goodness. And I want to see the glory of heaven and I want to see the earth restored. Isn't that what we want? We want in on that. So to get in on that, we're honest and say, begin with me. That's the beauty of the gospel. Begin with me, and I'm going to stay focused on that because I need more of you. Not the guy next to me or the lady behind me. I need it. And that's why I'm showing up to church. It's not ultimately the heart of Jesus to hide away the gospel. But it is the heart of Jesus that it would be beheld by those who treasure it. So his goal in this is not, I'll pick some of you and not some of you. The goal is, you've got to want it because this is the greatest treasure. And we'll see it come up in the parables. This is how he talks about it. This is the pearl of great price. This is the treasure you sell everything to get your hands on. This is everything. And if you can't see it, you won't see it. Until you can see it. That's what I actually believe. That this is the sovereign God who goes, if you want more dark, I'll let you have more dark. But at the deepest pit of that darkness is going to be me. This is the cross of Jesus. I'll go all the way down to get you when you're ready. Isn't that beautiful? This is our Jesus. So as we go through the parables over the next few months, I think the heart is to go, I don't just want to intellectually engage with this. I want it. I want to eat it, I want to need it, I want to receive it for me, for my salvation. Amen? Okay, let's turn our hearts to the table.